Hello and welcome. This is Richie Milani from Learning Without Borders, talking to you today about Ireland's fight for freedom. This is part three. The year is 1909 and Irish nationalists are fighting for more power within Ireland, hoping to get a little bit closer to Irish independence. Thomas Clark is over from America to recruit soldiers into the IRB. He sees this as the quickest and easiest way of creating an Irish army. In the north, Ulster Unionists are arming themselves, ready to fight against Home Rule if necessary. As we move into 1910, James Connolly, who is a Scottish socialist leader, comes over to Ireland and sees the injustice of the workers' rights. He goes on to set up the Transport and General Workers' Trade Union, to which approximately 20,000 Irish workers join overnight. James Connolly and James Larkin, his right-hand man, go on to join the IRB also. And moving into 1912, there is the Home Rule crisis. So this is basically where the Home Rule Bill that had been passed in 1883 was now going to increase in power. Irish nationalists in the House of Commons have been fighting for this for quite some time. In the north, the Unionists signed the Covenant in 1912. 500,000 Unionists signed a covenant agreeing to put their lives at stake to ensure protection of the north of Ireland against Home Rule. So 500,000 people are opposed against the Home Rule Bill. In Ireland, the response to this is by setting up the Irish Volunteers. 4,000 people signed up on the first evening, and by the end of the week, 170,000 Irish stood strong as the Irish Volunteers. And suddenly, Thomas Clark realised that the IRB needed to infiltrate the Irish Volunteers. Now, these guys were loyal to the Home Rule Bill. They were not signing up to rebel and attack the British Empire. In 1913, we had the lockout. This is where the employers of Dublin responded to James Connolly and James Larkin's workers' union demanding higher working wages, better working conditions. And they responded by locking out 20,000 workers from their places of employment and refusing to pay them. This caused rioting in the streets. There was a huge amount of fighting between the Irish Volunteers, the British police, the British soldiers, the workers that were part of the union. And this caused James Connolly to organise the Irish Citizens' Army, which would later become essential to the 1916 Rising. As we move into 1914, the Great War breaks out in Europe, and the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Unionists are called to stand with the British Army against the Germans. 90% of the Irish Volunteers were inspired by John Regiment, who was of the belief that the only way to unite Ireland was to stand with the British Army, the North and the South of Ireland standing together against the Germans, and then when the time for independence came, that might bring the North and the South together as a unified Ireland. There was about 10% of the Irish Volunteers, however, who disagreed and said that any sort of fighting or defending of the empire was a betrayal of the nationalist view and nationalist goal. This 10% was led by a man called Owen O'Neill, who surprisingly enough was a playwright and a teacher, but now stood as the chief of staff of the Irish Volunteers. And with about 7,000 men left in Ireland and the rest off at war, the British Empire distracted in Germany, John Devoy, over in America, saw this as an opportunity for the rebellion to begin. Devoy and Sir Roger Casement start working away over in America, gaining support for an Irish Republic, and also gaining funds. Also organising weapons as well to be smuggled over from New York over to the west coast of Ireland. Nearing the end of 1914, a military council of the IRB was formed, and they began to plan the Easter Rising of 1916. Though they didn't know when it was going to be at that time, but they did know that they had to strike while Britain were at war. Throughout 1915, Thomas Clark went around recruiting, planning. There was guns that was being smuggled and weapons into the country. Konstantin Markievicz set up the Cumann na Bán, which was a women's league of Irish volunteers who also would take up arms for Ireland's fight for freedom. In August of 1915, we saw Dublin City band together, united, for a sad occasion, a state funeral of an Irish Republican Brotherhood leader and a Parliament member for the Home Rule Bill, Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa, who died at 83. Now, the IRB, and primarily Thomas Clark, saw this as an opportunity to gain support for the IRB and sent Padraig Pearse, who was immensely talented with words, to speak at Jeremiah's funeral. He said, "They think that they have pacified us. They think they have purchased half of us and intimidated the other half. They think they have foreseen everything, think that they have provided against everything. But the fools, the fools, the fools, they have left us our Fenian dead. And while Ireland holds these graves, Ireland unfree shall never be at peace." This became one of the glorified speeches of the movement of the IRB and did rally support around the country. More and more people were volunteering to join the IRB and therefore needed to be armed. Now, Sir Roger Casement was of the belief that my enemy's enemy is my friend, and therefore went over to Germany and secured 20,000 rifles and 1 million rounds of ammunition onto the Aude ship, which would then be transported over to Ireland, to the southern west coast of Ireland, where it would be unloaded and then the guns would be transported up to Dublin. The IRB Military Council arranged 9 different strategic points around Dublin, which they would use the volunteers to take over by force and then hold out in those buildings for as long as possible, fighting off whatever opposition the British threw at them. However, the Aude arrived on the 20th of April, literally one day early. Instead of being greeted by the Irish volunteers to transport the weapons, Roger Casement was greeted by the Irish Royal Irish Constabulary and was arrested for high treason. The Aude never received a signal from the shore and was nearly captured by the British Navy. However, the captain sunk the ship. As news of the loss of the weapons reached Owen O'Neill's ears, the chief of staff for the volunteers, he put out a piece in the newspaper on Easter Monday that the volunteer movements and the rising had been cancelled. This enraged the military council on the morning of Easter Monday, and Konstantin Markievicz is said to have stormed into O'Neill's office and demanded his life for his betrayal, his treachery. Now, Konstantin Markievicz and Joseph Plunkett and James Connolly, etc., all travelled to Phoenix Park and met with 2,000, only 2,000 Irish volunteers who were going to fight for Ireland's freedom. And on they marched to the 9 different locations. The Irish Rising itself is amazing from a military point of view, because they marched through the streets and there was no resistance. Most of the British soldiers were off in World War I fighting. To give you an idea, there were 6 soldiers, 6 armed soldiers guarding Dublin Castle. So really the issue wasn't taking over the city, the real issue was keeping it. And so through Easter Monday and into the evening and into the Tuesday, taking over the city was quite easy. And then as news spread, by Tuesday, 6,000 British soldiers were being transferred from the countryside into Dublin. Throughout Thursday, the British soldiers attempted full frontal assaults on the strategic strongholds of the IRB members, but to no avail. Basically, the IRB members would pick off these inexperienced infantry as they were coming across bridges trying to get into the buildings. This went on throughout Thursday evening until the British soldiers realised they needed artillery to beat the rebels. On Saturday morning, artillery arrived from Britain and they bombed the city centre of Dublin, causing a massive explosion of a pharmaceutical chemical warehouse, which caused an inferno to erupt through the city centre, spreading from building to building like wildfire. The Irish rebels couldn't hold up against burning out buildings, and the entire city centre was essentially an inferno. By Sunday morning, the rebels were forced to surrender. Throughout Easter Sunday and Easter Monday, the British soldiers arrested the IRB members and they were sent to prison camps. Apart from the 15 essential leaders, such as James Connolly, Padraic Pearse, Thomas McDonough, these leaders were marked and executed over 14 days under court-martial and trial. The only man to escape the execution was a man called Eamon de Valera, who would later become the most important political figure in Ireland over the next 50 years. He also becomes the first Irish president. It was his joint American citizenship that protected him from execution. However, he did get sent to jail for 3 years up until 1919. The 1916 Rising had caused 485 deaths. 260 of these were civilians, women, children, and then 126 were British soldiers, along with 82 Irish rebels and 17 police. And it wasn't a massacre of a rebellion. It was a huge stalemate of a rebellion, which left Dublin in ruin. However, it left behind Irish people with a taste of freedom, a vision for an independent republic. And throughout 1917, 18, and into 1919, the feelings of rebellion, of independence, still held strong, and it gave birth to Michael Collins and Eamon de Valera, which paved the way to a free state, Ireland. And it won't be until 1949 in history when the Irish Republic is official, but it was the 1916 Rising that freed Ireland from the chains of the British Empire. And Ireland free shall always be at peace. Thanks for listening, guys, and well done.